Hello there, one and all, and welcome to this edition of the Weekly Chat with myself and, of course, our resident guru, Ralph Hepken. This week, we are going to be talking about two things. Firstly, we're going to be looking at the good news. And secondly, we're going to be talking about the prospects for UK IPOs rebounding. So, on the first thing, looking at the good news, it seems like things may be perking up for the UK. We found out this week that the UK has now pulled out of recession and that the labour market is cooling down, according to the latest research from KPMG and REC, and the CEO of Reed, which is one of the UK's biggest recruiters. The Bank of England left interest rates unchanged, but hinted that they are on the verge of cutting them. And all of this would suggest that interest rates are going to come down. That's generally good for markets. And if markets start perking up, that's when we start seeing more IPOs. So there you go. I mean, in danger of becoming an optimistic podcast. What do you think, Ralph?
Well, yes, I mean, this is absolutely brilliant. I remember perhaps 2 years ago, we were sitting here and we were commenting on the constitution of the news flow, which we needed to comment on very negatively indeed.
Yeah.
I think we were trying hard to avoid swear words, which we can,
yes,
of course, never publish on this podcast.
Yes.
But these swear words do exist, and we thought they would, they did characterize the developments 2 years ago adequately. Mm. However, now they don't, and indeed, it is, as you said, the summary which you gave flows together very nicely, and it feels as if we are on the verge of a situation where indeed, well, we will have to see. I'm going to jinx it now. Where indeed we're moving into a more benign situation where not just one factor looks positive, but where the interaction between various economic indicators might well produce a holistic improvement.
Yeah.
Now, just looking at some of these, though, I mentioned the word though. I mean, I'm not going to poke holes in this, but I was amused by the headlines which we saw, UK coming out of recession.
Yeah.
It said UK exits recession.
Yeah.
And there's something there. There is a psychology here. There is something which this suggests. There is a connotation. And the connotation is, we've done it. We're out of the woods. This is it. Can I just remind everybody of a funny thing which occurred to me when I read this? It takes two consecutive quarters of negative growth. And again, anybody who doesn't like me saying negative growth, I'm not going to say anything. So contraction, if you want, it takes
two quarters.
I'm going to say it again now.
It's a trigger, man. But anyway, yeah.
Everybody is triggered by different things. I'm triggered by people saying inflection point
rather than
turning point.
Of course, yes.
Anyway, going back to what I was hoping to illustrate is simply this. It takes two quarters of negative growth to be in recession. So if you think about it, it only takes one quarter of growth to come out of recession.
Absolutely.
So in other words, we haven't really seen anything much yet. If we get the next quarter and it is negative again, then we haven't technically fallen back into recession, but it sort of would not support the euphoria which I see in the press. Especially not when I actually look from the, let's say, the more cultured or intelligent press towards our tabloids, where I've seen one paper saying the UK economy is going gangbusters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's going to the opposite extreme. But, I mean, you know, I think the fact that we only dipped our toes very, very quickly into the deep sea of recession. It was just more of a, let's just test the waters. No, we don't like that. It's too cold. Let's go. Let's get back to growth again. Is what I'm hoping.
I see. That's how it works.
I'm not being particularly ecstatic about the whole thing, but I think it's good that we have exited it. I mean, when you consider the context of like the OECD, the IMF, and any other kind of acronym you care to mention, basically saying that UK is going down the toilet, and we're going to be the worst in the G7, blah, 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 all the time. It's actually quite good to sort of say, well, actually, we're not in recession anymore. But I take your point that it takes two to go into recession and one quarter to be out of recession.
Exit. So, yeah, no, I'm not saying this is negative in any way. I'm just commenting on the connotation of the news headlines, which would suggest that we're out of the woods, whereas in fact we're not. However, one other point is also this. If it's the gangbusters theme, you know, where it's not exactly gangbusters, but let's not be too dismissive of what happened here, because we have 0.6% growth here. And again, anybody, before we poo-poo that, we still remember, I think, several months ago, where it was touch and go whether we would go into recession or not. And then we didn't. And the papers were saying the UK avoids recession narrowly. And that quarter was 0.1% growth. So just by comparison to a quarter which saved us from recession, this is six times more growth rate. So 0.6% may not sound like very much, but it is actually, in the context of the current quarterly growth which we're experiencing, not just in our economy, but also around the world globally, not a insignificant growth rate. So that is absolutely good news, and I'll stop poo-pooing it now.
No, I mean, you know, it is good news. I think it you know, Jen, we're seeing other, and the other thing as well, of course, is that we have been used to seeing a lot of negative news recently, and specifically about the government, where obviously Sunak has done badly, well, the Conservatives have done badly, and so in a way, this news is not all to do with him. But obviously he has had something to do with this, at a difficult point for the economy. But I think that, it's good news. It's good news in a massive sea of bad news for, Sunak. And is it really going to help him win the election at the end of the year? I mean, it's certainly not going to be a negative. Is it too little too late? Maybe. I mean, it depends, doesn't it? I mean, in the next quarter, for instance, if we do see really good growth, then maybe it really might help him. But if it either falls into contraction again, I mean, I think if it falls into contraction, he is 100% toast. Although I'd say, at the moment, he's 98% toast. So, yeah, you know.
Welcome to our new segment, Political Analysis, with with Peter and Ralph. Toast is word which has been used in since time immemorial in political analysis. Anyway, it probably has done. But it has been. Yes, on that subject, no, I don't believe so. Because it is too little too late, but that's not quite the right metaphor to use. I would say that, unfortunately, this is very unfair, but I believe still true, the electorate does not give politicians easily credit for economic prosperity, whereas it easily blames them for economic contraction. If you've got high inflation, as we have or have done, it's now coming down, of course, then it is an easy instinct to blame the government for that. But you would only do if you feel it in your own pocket. You know, and this is sort of my point. Even if you have high inflation, if you read about it in the papers, but you don't really feel it in your SME, in your small medium business, in your household expenses, then it remains an abstract economic statistic. But when you feel it in your pocket because your mortgage payments go up, et cetera, as we have, of course, we are still living through this, but we have lived through this over the last 15 months or so. then it's becoming real. And so by analogy or in reverse of this, you can say that, yes, it's great to see that we have exited recession, but 0.6% growth is not going to translate easily and quickly enough into the reality of household expenses for us to breathe out and say, oh yeah, now it's going all right again. We don't have to vote the Conservatives out, because that's the sort of sentiment which would need to prevail for this government to stay. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that there is enough time. I mean, end of the year is going to be the last moment where a general election can be called, and the remaining, whatever it might be, 6 months or so are not going to be long enough to establish a positive economic trend, even if it was going to be consistent quarter after quarter after quarter, to such an extent that people will actually feel it in their household income, or at least so I claim. I mean, that's sort of my reading of this. And then also, I think people are, just staying with the politics for a moment, I believe just people are just fatigued now of the Conservatives. And that is not necessarily even the feeling which can be tied to any one specific event which happened during the Conservatives. It's the memory of a string of, well, I would say negative, but objectively, I think we can say tumultuous events. I'm just going to be careful, because the first one was Brexit. Some people may think that's a positive thing. I mean, I don't know. But it was certainly an incisive event which has not been managed well, and which has led to disruption. And then, of course, we can take it from there. And I'm not going to go through the list, but we've had five prime ministers since then. And I think people are just fatigued now of the instability which goes with that. And that is a very nice word to use, because I think that's a cue for you, because you did mention that as well. We have in your category of positives, there was also the fact that we might actually move into a period of political stability if there is a change. You can almost say when there will be a change.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems to be the case that, I mean, it would require a number of miracles, I think, for Sunak to continue. And I think that, yeah, to continue into another term. I think that, yeah, I mean, I mean, to the extent that if Labour lost this election, it should disband, because how can it lose this? You know, I can see why it lost the last election, because, you know, obviously the leader at that point was quite divisive in terms of, you know, he had very strong support. The people that supported him felt very strongly, but then there were a lot of people who were not big fans, or were a bit more cautious, didn't think he would be the right person, and that's how Boris Johnson won. You know, this time, I don't know. It just feels. I was trying to think the other day about what this feels like compared to in 97. Because I feel that in 97, when it was a shift from Labour, a long time of Labour being in, to the Conservatives, back then, I think just the Conservatives had run out of ideas. Things just weren't going very well. And you had John Major as the Prime Minister at the time. And I felt that he just, although he had apparently done a great job during the Thatcher years. I think, was he Chancellor or Home Secretary? I mean, it was one of the, you know, it was a senior job. He's very well respected at that. But he was terrible going into that final election. And he lost miserably. You know, he didn't do very well. And it does make me want, you know, I, on a side note, I do wonder why every now and again they wheel him out and they, you know, quote him and his reactions to things as if he's some sort of guru. I mean, he's, I know this sounds kind of nasty, I'm sure he's a lovely guy, but he's a has-been, he didn't win, and, you know, why does anyone care? I know that sounds possibly a little bit harsh, but here we are now, you know, fast forward to now, and I think that the last few years, I mean, certainly this term, at the very least, has been a nightmare. You know, I mean, I defy anyone to have done well over as a leader of a country in the last 5 years, over the things that have happened over the last 5 years. I mean, you've had, you know, Bojo won at the end, right at the end of 2019. A pandemic happened at the beginning of 2020. Then you've got the, you know, Ukraine, was that beginning of 2022? Was that 2020? Yeah.
2020.
There was Ukraine. I mean, all these things, and now obviously you've got Middle East. All of these things happening in very quick succession. And, you know, in some ways, I'm not a massive supporter of Sunak particularly, but if you just look at what has happened, you know, he became prime minister because the Truss Kwarteng thing was such a massive disaster. And he was brought in as a safe pair of hands because it had been deemed that he'd done a reasonable job as a chancellor through some very difficult times. So he was brought in along with Hunt to try and steady the ship, which they kind of did. They did, but then more things happened and it just got worse and worse. So this is a very long and convoluted thought process here, but whereas in 97, I just think the Conservatives had run out of ideas and just everyone just wanted someone different. This time round, I think that the government has been a victim of many things that have been of its own making, but also it's been a victim of very unusual, significant geopolitical events going on in a very short period of time at the point where you've got a big shift in relations between different regions and different countries. So, like I say, I mean, I just think there is a difference. And anyway, despite all that, if Labour loses this, I think they should disband, think about what they do. But I don't think that's going to happen. But yeah.
No, I don't believe. Well, it's always difficult to actually do these political analyses. But if you invoke the era Thatcher, it's of course always very difficult to follow on somebody who completely dominated the political and social sphere of her day. The same is true for Tony Blair. So now we have a different situation. It's not as if we are moving from a situation where one particular politician dominated an era into one where the successor cannot actually then fill those particular person's shoes.
Just going to say, you have to be in power for longer than 5 minutes, right?
Yes, exactly.
It tends
there
to help.
Is the definition of era, indeed. So this time we have the situation where we have just to look back on an unprecedented, and I'm going to use this word, an unprecedented shambles. I mean, it is really unbelievable what the Conservative Party have done. And this starts with Cameron. You mentioned Bojo, fine, but let's not forget Cameron, who basically gambled the economy and the social integrity of an entire nation on his own weakness, and he lost. So that's where this all started. But you're absolutely correct. Some of it, that was of its own making, but a lot of it wasn't. Nobody covered themselves in glory, as you rightly pointed out, in the management of the COVID situation. But then, of course, from hindsight, it is beginning to become clear that Boris Johnson not only failed to do that, he made it worse through his specific negligent dealing with his own rules. But that's all history and shouldn't really concern us now. We are talking about the good news sheet, and the good news sheet is, of course, that interest rates have been flagged to potentially be down on the next move of the Bank of England. This time they were kept at the same level, but we may look at a reduction in summer. What might derail or delay such a reaction is if the job market were going gangbusters, to actually say that, but clearly it isn't. That was one other point in your summary. So there is less supporting upwards pressure on inflation from that side. And so it may well be that we are seeing a reduction in interest rates, which is going to be good for everybody for obvious reasons. Mortgage rates will follow, the cost of living will recede, but also from the point of view of companies, because clearly payments on corporate debt are going to be lower, and the stock markets will benefit as earnings are discounted at lower interest rates, leading to higher valuations. And of course, this argument which I've recently been hearing, this may segue into our next topic in terms of the IPO pipeline at the LSE, the London Stock Exchange. As some have mentioned, the expectation of political stability is going to be a good thing. Well, we'll have to see. I'm not entirely convinced about this particular argument, but it may well be that reduced interest rates in itself will be a potential support of IPOs. And the IPO pipeline has been quite empty recently, as we have commented on before. There is less IPOs at the LSE. We're losing out to the New York Stock Exchange a lot. And maybe the other piece of news which we're commenting on is going to change that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's the thing. So yes, we're moving into now. From the good news to the possibly even better news about the initial public offerings market. Now, the thing is that I think it'd be fair to say, since end of last year, maybe even, you know, to the end back to the end of last summer, possibly. I know that you know, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs have been saying that they feel that there is, you know, there's going to be a turning point reached, not an inflection point, a turning point. The number of IPOs and just M&A as well in general activity definitely feels like it has improved. I mean, this is a silly thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. But, you know, obviously when I'm writing What's in This Daily, I have to think of all the different sections. And it felt like for a long time, I didn't write anything really about M&A and IPOs. And then suddenly I had to put whole sections in on M&A and IPOs, right? Because they're just more and more happening. I think that we are definitely seeing more of this going on at the moment. I mean, it seems to me to have started with the oil industry probably last year, and then it spread through. We're now seeing things where you've got private equity firms now eventually being able to sell off some of the assets that they picked up when money was cheap. When debt was cheap and when lots of companies were going through difficulties. So they're now starting to happen. And then we saw this week the London Stock Exchange said that there was definitely a pipeline building. And they were saying that actually some or a lot of them are waiting in the wings because They're waiting for there's a new listing rules, the biggest overhaul of the rules, of the listing rules for 40 years. They're waiting for those to come in. And when they do, they are going to be more relaxed. And that means that more companies will be able to list. And once we see that kind of thing start to happen and it succeeds, then you get it builds momentum and builds momentum because companies see doing an IPO as a good thing, something they can gain from. So as you know, the stock markets start going up, more people start listing, those listings do well, more companies keep listing, and then you get into a sort of, you know, you create your own momentum. And I feel that there's a lot of things that are coming together which should help to push that along. We're coming into summer, interest rates coming down, more people could, you know, we're still in a time where lots of people potentially buy houses. So there's that. I mean, I don't know. It's just so many things. And the whole potential change of government as well, providing an excuse for people to say, oh, things are going to be different now. It's not going to be the same as before. And it just keeps on building and building and building. And then IPOs start to really, you know, build momentum. And then we're back on a kind of bull market run, potentially. But is that the salesman's talking in me? I don't know. But
yes,
it does feel like things are turning around. But you can't, especially these days, there's so many geopolitical things can totally, you know, be real kind of banana skins here. I mean, I'm saying if everything else is equal and there's no disruption and that sort of thing, then this is what could happen. But of course, some sort of geopolitical event could happen and it all gets pushed away. But anyway, please rein in my optimism.
Okay. Well, you guys got a glimpse into what it was like when Peter and I were working together. Here is the salesman, and now the equity analyst comes in and says, everything that guy said is rubbish.
Yeah.
No, not at all. I'm not going to rein this in very much at all. I'm just going to maybe say this. I mean, this is specifically now on the LSE listings. I mean, first of all, the situation has been over the last year, certainly, that I always say we, because I still think that I'm a city boy, you know, although, of course, I'm retired, but that we lost a lot of listings to the New York Stock Exchange. Mm. And some of these, or several of these listings, were in the tech sector, because people were sort of thinking that in New York, the investors, they get tech more. This is what you heard. They understand tech better. You get higher valuations. But I don't really know whether that's true or not. I've always suspected that the listing
rules. Such a load of rubbish.
Yeah.
I think it's quite condescending to investors over here, because it sounds like makes it sound like investors over here are country bumpkins, have
yes.
no idea, and they're like, I don't know what this is.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, yes, we do understand.
We do have electricity here, and we have a coffee machine, and we know how to switch it on.
Exactly. Basically, though, I think what it is that the American investors are more comfortable with a higher level of risk in specific areas like tech, I would suggest. Not they understand, they get tech. It's not that, because we all get tech. It's more that they are okay. They are more okay with it if it blows up, or they are, and they are potentially more used to it as well, because obviously they've had many spectacular fails, but they've also had some incredibly spectacular wins as well. So yeah, I mean that's I've always found it quite condescending when you know, companies say, oh, they just don't get us, and I think that, you know, in terms of the the IPOs or the listings that we've lost. Again, I feel quite strongly about that. I feel that a lot of the listings that we've lost is because the businesses have changed. You know, like you've got like a mining company, you can buy a load of mines from another company, and suddenly the investor base that you have has shifted because of your acquisition. So you become more US focused. Flutter is a great example as well, right? So basically gambling is dying in this country because you've got those fixed odds betting terminals, which are a massive cash cow, that were in betting shops up and down the country. They basically got shut down, not shut down, but you know, the winnings went down massively. No one bothers. So the footfall went down. Gambling, the number of gambling outlets, you know, the number of betting shops went down. There's a lot more regulation on gambling. And then suddenly in the US, there was the deregulation of sports betting. Suddenly, all of the expertise that Flutter has gained in this very competitive market in online betting is suddenly incredibly useful over in the US. So the growth is over there. The investors are over. So it makes sense to go over there, you know. And so I think, you know, maybe with a lot of things, I can see that there's a logic to these companies moving over to the US. If you're a tech company, you're probably going to be more inclined to go to the US because you're probably going to get a higher rating. In other words, you're going to be able to raise more money there because they will attach a higher rating to your shares, perhaps, than they would in London, maybe a slightly more conservative in London. And let's face it, if you, in an IPO, if you're looking to raise money, you want to, as a company, you want it to be as high as possible. Whereas maybe the advisors don't want it to be as high as possible because they still want the feel good to happen. So they want it to be high, but not ridiculously high, so that the shares go up and everyone gets the feel good, and then more IPOs start coming in. But anyway, I think that people who've predicted this is a downfall of the UK and all this kind of stuff, I feel they missed the point. And I feel that, you know, a lot of this is these listings are going for various different reasons, and it's not necessarily that. But as you're saying, the new listing rules are coming in, which will make it easier. But you've also got that, and you've got all the other potential catalysts. But anyway, I'll shut up. Sorry, I'm getting into them.
Well, I mean, the when I said that the idea is that investors in the US get tech. Mm. I think that statement was sort of motivated by the fact that, of course, some of the most highly market capitalized tech companies are domiciled in the US.
Of course.
And that is why the allegation is that, therefore, the investor base in the US is more primed to accept the potential earnings growth of a tech company as something which is based on reality rather than fantasy, and therefore buy into an IPO which is happening on the New York Stock Exchange. The second point, of course, is that the US is a bigger market than the UK. Didn't used to be when the UK was in this club, which I can't remember what it was called, something like European Union or something, but I believe.
Union. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I believe we left the club. It appears that the single market is second only in market capitalization or GDP to the United States. I read somewhere it's probably a lie, but let us just assume that this is the case. Then obviously we don't have access to that market anymore, or not in as unfettered a form as we used to. And that does make, of course, a UK domiciled new startup perhaps more wary of what sort of markets they can actually sell their products into. Right. So these are two issues which perhaps have accelerated the issue or the paucity of IPOs, which we've recently seen. Or it's not so much paucity, it's more the fact that IPOs were canvassed to take place on the LSE and then move to NYSE. That was the issue. Now, the London Stock Exchange has responded to this, and we need to do something. I mean, we can't go back into the EU if that is in fact a valid issue or valid point which are raised, but we can facilitate our listing rules here. And that is being done and has been done. And I think the new listing rules is going to come into power, are going to be in force in 2 weeks' time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go through them because, guys, believe me, I mean, listing rules, that is one of these subjects which reduces your will to live to zero very, very quickly. But I'm just going to mention one. I mean, first of all, sorry, I have to say that. In the UK, on the LSE, there are two categories of companies. One category is a premium listing, and the other one is a standard listing. And the premium listing companies, they are subject to the highest rigor of regulation and demand in terms of what they need to be able to demonstrate in order to qualify for a listing. The standard listings have a less onerous level of responsibility. And it is the listing rules for the premium segment which have been facilitated. Now, and there are five of them. I'm not going to mention them. I'm just going to mention one because I think this is important. You used to have a trade record of 3 years, unencumbered 3 years trading records, which you needed to be able to demonstrate through reports and accounts, and a clean statement on your working capital. Now, this has been axed. This is gone. I mean, it's not as if this has been reduced from 3 to 2. This has been completely removed. So that obviously facilitates the listing of startups because they haven't got any trading history yet. And who might these startups be which we're interested in? Of course, these are tech companies. They're not called tech companies. They're called high growth companies. But these are tech companies, of course, potential high growth. And so you can see where this is going. My reading of the change in LSE listing rules, and although I may be biased there a little bit in my analysis, but it appears to me that these were done specifically to attract tech companies into the LSE and revert the trend which we've recently seen that IPOs in tech companies all went to NYSE, to the New York Stock Exchange. And so that is one thing which is, I hope, going to revert this flow and support IPOs on the LSE. And the other thing, of course, are economic factors such as lower interest rates, etc., which of course the listing rules have nothing to do with. But just one other thing on this. When I read this in the press, there is this rather feeble argument which I think is attached to it, which is the idea that a change in government might usher in a period of stability, which is of course going to be positive for companies anywhere, but in particular newly listed companies, and that in itself would also facilitate the IPO pipeline. And there's nothing wrong with the statement. I think that is true. It is just we need to examine this with a little bit of a pinch of salt. Just because we get a change, we might get a change from a party and a government which has, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it, basically attested to its incompetence over the last several years, does not necessarily mean that the new government which we might get is going to be any better. It looks as if it will be, if you just look at the Labour Party prospectus and the statements which are being made. But we can also see that, of course, the Labour Party is already now under pressure from dynamics which have nothing to do with UK politics. Labour is under pressure from the Israel-Gaza war, and there might be tumultuous times ahead under Labour as there were under the Conservatives. Nevertheless, that's just a statement to sort of comment on some of the news headlines which you see in the press. I still think that on balance, it's a fair statement to make that the change in government will certainly usher in stability, certainly for us for a number of years, we might think. And together with all the other factors which we mentioned and the change in listing rules, it looks to be a shot in the arm for the UK economy and the stock exchange.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose that would be good, you know, sort of place to finish, really. I mean, it just does feel like many things are turning a corner. We'll just have to wait to see whether that's right. I think it'd be interesting to see whether, you know, does Rishi Sunak decide to stick it out, you know, and try to hang on until bitter end, or, you know, will he just throw caution to the wind and have a election now? I doubt it. But, you know, all those kinds of things. And then whether or not this, all the hype on the IPOs is going to come to fruition. And I think it will. So anyway, yeah, a more positive podcast, I think. Hopefully more positive ones to come. But anyway, brilliant. As always, thank you very much indeed, Ralph, for all your thoughts. And thank you very much for the listeners and watchers for watching this, and have a lovely day, whatever you do.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks then. Bye.
Bye.